All right, we're going to try to keep on schedule here and start with the next presentation. We've got ProAssurance. Today we've got representatives Howard Freeman, who's the president of the Healthcare Professional Liability Operations, and Frank O'Neill, SVP and head of Investor Relations. So we'll start off, as we have been doing, with a general overview, and then we'll head into Q&A. And I encourage you all to think of some cues. Okay.
Hi, I'm Howard Friedman. Thank you for coming. General overview on ProAssurance. We are a healthcare-centric professional liability insurer by background. Company has been in operation since the late 1970s when it was created to serve the physicians in Alabama that didn't have medical malpractice insurance available to them. Over the years, ProAssurance has grown, become a public company in 1991, has grown primarily through acquisitions. We've done over 30 in our corporate history. Over the past several years, we've expanded our product portfolio to be able to serve healthcare customers in a variety of different ways and different areas of healthcare, including medical products and life sciences, podiatry, allied health. And last year, we added to that the acquisition of Eastern Insurance Holdings, which gives us the ability to provide workers' comp coverage to our healthcare clients, but also added a great business to ProAssurance, a very successful workers' comp company with an exceptional track record. And we also created or invested in the creation of Syndicate 1729 at Lloyd's, which we are a 58% capital provider, giving us an opportunity to do international health care as well as the opportunity to benefit from the underwriting of Duncan Dale, who is an exceptional underwriter with a long track record in the Lloyd's market and creation of that new syndicate. Frank, anything?
I think that's a very nice summary. I would point out that we take a long-term view of what is a very long-term market, a long-tail market. Our record of creating book values has been pretty extraordinary over the year. We've been able to report an increase in year-end book value every year since we became public. The cumulative from 1991, September 11th, 1991 until June 30th, has been about 2,400% share price cumulative growth over that period of time, about 1,675%. So we've had a great record of doing the kinds of things that both protect our shareholders and or protect our policyholders and reward our shareholders.
Okay. The stock hasn't done much over the last year, and I think I'm going to try to direct the comments, my questions, to maybe the theoretically the concerns that investors may have, starting off with the healthcare professional liability market. It's done phenomenally well over the years. Rates haven't really done much. What can we expect in that line going forward in terms of profitability? Are the margins deteriorating? Are they staying the same? Can I get your thoughts on that market first?
Healthcare professional liability market, I think, is an unusually good place right now from a historical perspective and has been for a number of years. And I'm talking specifically about the loss environment. The claim frequency has been down as compared to historical standards and has been down now for 7 or 8 years and has been quite flat and continues to be flat. So we are seeing the number of claims and suits per measure of exposure, whether you're measuring it on number of physician providers or number of hospital beds, being quite stable and low. Claim severity has been moving upwards 2 to 3% per year, which is, while increasing, is historically also quite low compared to what we've seen over the past 2 or 3 decades. So it's created a very stable, predictable loss environment, which has benefited ProAssurance in particular and the industry in general with the opportunity to generate favorable reserve development from prior year reserves, and this comes mostly from the severity being lower than expected. As we're closing claims, we're closing them at average values that were less than anticipated when we established those reserves. and that's flowed through the calendar year results and continues to do so. The overall environment as a result of the losses being low and pretty stable has been quite competitive. There are a good number of competitors out there, both very small companies that operate in certain niches in the market or very limited geographical areas to much larger companies like ourselves. And the marketplace is competitive for a few reasons. One is that there is a trend and has been a trend of physicians becoming employed by hospitals and moving out of the private practice space. That has contracted the available marketplace for physicians. So those writers like ourselves who have been in that market are competing for a somewhat smaller overall market share. We've seen on the hospital side, as physicians become employed by hospitals, those hospitals bring them into the programs that they have for insurance and take a larger retention or larger deductible, which also compresses the overall amount of premium that's available. And then the competitive nature of the market itself has caused some of the smaller companies in particular to become much more aggressive. They've built up a reasonable capital base and they're unwilling to give up business even if that business starts to become underpriced. So we've had to pick and choose our spots. We've had to turn away business that may have liked to write from a quality standpoint, but because the pricing is not where it needs to be from our return perspective. And the same thing on renewal business. If we can't get a price that we think is going to provide this long-term result for us, we have to let that go. Our target on pricing is a 13% after-tax return on equity. We've been very consistent about that over the years, and we expect to meet that standard. So the opportunities for us in this market come from our balance sheet, our range of services, our geographical spread. We can provide solutions pretty much across the entire country. We can provide solutions pretty much across the entire spectrum of healthcare, professional liability, and related coverages now. And we're in a much better position than many of our historical competitors to write the larger entities. We've been writing hospitals since 1984. We have a lot of experience in that area. And with the ratings that we have and with the size of the capital base, we are attractive to hospitals that are looking for coverage, whereas many of our smaller competitors either have no experience or have balance sheets that make them unattractive.
Part of your bread and butter has been small, single practitioners or small groups, and now you're going to be evolving into, sounds like, maybe larger.
And already have been.
Yeah. How does that change the dynamics in terms of the types of claims you're going to get, the types of competitors that you're going to be going against? I mean, you're going to face more competition for the larger policies, because that seems to be the trend that most companies say. The larger the policies, the more competition there is.
Sure. Certainly true, and I think that's just the nature of any kind of insurance product. If you're going to put the effort into selling it, you'd rather sell a larger policy to a larger customer. There is a distinction, and particularly in claims handling, in terms of what physicians have historically looked for and what hospitals have looked for. Physicians are individually responsible for their acts, and they carry that record with them through their entire career. If a claim is settled on behalf of a physician, or if there is a verdict against the physician that results in a payment, that verdict or that payment is recorded by the National Practitioners Data Bank and in most states in some type of a statewide database that is utilized for a variety of purposes, primarily to provide a credentialing process for physicians that are from a disciplinary standpoint or as physicians renew their hospital privileges. It also, in more than half the states right now, is publicly available. So physicians are very concerned about their individual track record, and physicians generally are looking for the defense of non-meritorious claims against them. And we've been very vigorous in over the years in defending physicians. We've taken more cases to trial than any of our competitors, and we've developed quite a reputation and following in the physician community for being a company that will defend the good practice of medicine. And in many years, in many places, we've spent more on defense than we have on indemnity, and that can be a substantial amount of money involved in retaining attorneys and experts and taking cases all the way through trial. On the hospital side of the business, it's a little different. Hospitals are part of the community. Hospitals are generally trying to retain their business. They're trying to stay out of the news. They're trying to make sure that patients don't get any adverse perspective on them. So a hospital generally is much more prone to settle a case, much more interested in resolving a case and continuing on with business. They're not, in the sense, individually responsible like a physician is. And we've been able to navigate that and work in that balance over the past 30 years by customizing the way that we handle claims for hospitals versus physicians. And certainly you get into situations where you insure both and you have to be able to work with both parties. A hospital may want to get out of a case early and the physician may want to have that case defended. And most of our policies for physicians require us to get their consent before we can settle a case so that they can protect their reputation. And I think the long history that we've had in that gives us the ability to do both. But as the business gravitates more towards very large physician groups and hospitals, there will be less of an emphasis from those policyholders on having their cases defended, and we will adapt to that. But for the physicians that want their reputation to be protected, I think we do it as well or better than anybody in the industry, and statistics show that.
I think one thing to follow on with that is, as hospitals or larger organizations have ingested all of these physicians as they've come in, they've probably ingested more than they can effectively digest. If you think about it, a hospital captive in a risk management office that was set up to handle five hospitalists and two radiologists, all of a sudden is now responsible for 50 physicians and 10 remote practices, and it may create opportunities for ProAssurance to provide services into that captive or to share risk with that captive. Capital is going to be a very dear commodity for a lot of hospitals and large organizations in the coming years, as reimbursements decline and they begin to search for funds. And so ProAssurance has the ability to come in, offload some of those balance sheet requirements. We can either assume the captive, co-insure with the captive. So we are able to be of assistance as hospitals begin to bring in those physicians. It's not like we're totally out of that market.
Right, and I think the point I was trying to make here is if investors are concerned about kind of getting beyond your core small niche, you're basically saying you've been doing it for a long time. Mm-hmm. This newer type of business, newer profile that you're getting into, you've been doing it for a long time, and you can adapt to it.
That's true. Sure. We've insured hospitals since the late 80s.
Yeah. I know you've been asked a lot of times, have you had any more clarity as the impact of healthcare reform on loss trends or anything like that?
I think the short answer is no. Our expectation and still our expectation is that the increased number of individuals that have health insurance access to medical care on a more traditional basis that will come out of the Affordable Care Act, as that number mushrooms, there will be an increased demand and probably an overwhelming demand on existing medical services. There are only so many physicians out there, and we can't create physicians really fast enough to meet the need that potentially will come out of 30 million additional insured Americans. So we feel that over a period of time there will be increasing frustration on the part of patients when they can't get an appointment in a reasonable time frame, or they can't spend as much time with their physician as they're used to, or they are seeing a nurse practitioner instead of a physician when they feel that they need a physician's care, and that any little thing that goes wrong will make those patients frustrated, disgruntled, and more likely to file claims or lawsuits. That's our expectation. The slow ramp up of the ACA and the difficulties in getting patients enrolled has not created that number of insureds that were expected at this point in time. That may, well materialize and continue over a period of time, but so far we have not seen any real dislocation in the system.
I think there's another sort of flip side to that is that, and this would have occurred with or without the ACA, but the sheer cost pressure in American healthcare has driven the provision of healthcare further down the healthcare food chain. The podiatrist might be doing much more of what an orthopedic surgeon was doing. People who used to spend the last 2 weeks of their life in a hospital are now more likely to be at home with home health care. And so it's created an entire new spectrum of risk that we have acquired companies beginning in 2007 to address those new risks. So as we have seen and really correctly predicted and anticipated new risks coming into the system, we've been able to either develop programs or acquire expertise to deal with those. So I think there's a positive aspect in that as well.
Right. And you've expanded into some product liability as well, like over the past few years. How, you know, it's a pretty long
medical devices.
I assume that has a pretty long tail, claims tail. How do you get comfortable with that business at this point, that it's priced okay?
First, the company that we acquired, Medmark, has specialized. It's really been their only business since it was created. And Medmark was created for many of the same reasons that a lot of the physician liability companies were created in the late 1970s, the unavailability in the commercial market of product liability for manufacturers and of medical devices. So Medmark has a close to 30-year track record and history in this market and developed a tremendous amount of expertise in the market. So from that perspective, we're quite comfortable with the way that the underwriting is being done, the way that the claims are being handled, and Medmark has had a good history in doing that. Medmark also tends to focus on the smaller to medium-sized manufacturers, the smaller medium-sized distributors, not the very large international pharmaceutical companies and those companies that have a greater exposure to more catastrophic type losses. Nevertheless, there is a tail to the business, no question about it. Devices, particularly implantable devices, can wind up being found to be defective over a period of time. Most of Medmark's business is, almost all of Medmark's business, really, when you get down to it, is on a claims-made basis, as is most of our physician and hospital professional liability coverage, which means that you're covering 1 year at a time in terms of claims that are being reported. You're not covering a product based on the date of its manufacture forever. So you have the ability to react if you start to see any claims activity in a particular type of medical product or area or certain types of clinical trials and react with underwriting and pricing on a more rapid basis.
I think it's also instructive to note that a lot of the larger healthcare organizations and physician groups that we insure were beginning to run their own clinical trials, develop, in some ways participate in the development of medical devices. So it further enabled us to meet the needs of people we already insured, and I think further cements our leadership there.
All right. Any questions out in the audience before I move on to Eastern Insurance? No? Okay. So, yeah, go ahead.
Up here, sir. We got one right here.
So what could be well publicized is the John Coffin circumstance.
Yep.
A physician committed unspeakable acts against his patient. He was discovered. He promptly committed suicide, and Hopkins settled for $190 million, which is a very different business than what you all have. At least that's my perception. How is that going to work in the future, meaning for you guys?
You know, when that you have that type of a situation, it ultimately comes down in that particular case to the credentialing responsibility and the oversight responsibility of the facility, and which is can be an issue in any type of hospital or facility. It doesn't have to be a very large teaching hospital like Hopkins. We have historically, and even to this day, tended to insure smaller and medium-sized hospitals. That doesn't mean that it couldn't happen there, but it narrows the scope. We have tended to be a writer more of primary layer coverage, where we are providing claim services and loss prevention activities, and meaning that our limits are relatively restricted. Certainly in that instance at Hopkins, there were maybe 20 different insurers writing different layers of that coverage, so the risk does get spread around. And that's what happens in the catastrophic type coverage for large entities. There isn't any way to completely insulate yourself from that. I mean, there is no amount of loss prevention activity that will prevent that type of activity. That is a moral type issue. But it is covered under these policies, and it is something that you have to educate. You have to make sure that the right kinds of, not only procedures, but the right kind of culture is in place, and you have to evaluate that in your underwriting decision.
I guess I don't necessarily agree with all these concerns, but some of the concerns that people raise about your company are that the ACA is a negative, and you know that hasn't proven itself out yet, or hasn't been proven wrong yet either. Core business competition is intensifying. Prior period development is slowing, and the ROE is generally under pressure. And that's driven you to use excess capital to buy businesses outside of your core competency, you know, Eastern, Delta Lloyd's business. Kind of, when people raise those concerns, how would you respond to them? And, you know, what's the case for investors to get excited about being an investor in PRA over maybe the next 12 to 18 months?
Okay. In no particular order, in terms of prior period development, you know, we continue to generate significant prior period development, and that mostly comes, again, from the fact that claims are closing at lower than expected values. We had a very large amount of prior period development three years ago, because at that point we reevaluated where we stood in the sense of we had been expecting, with the lower claim frequency, we had been expecting the quality, if you will, of claims to increase. In other words, if fewer claims are being filed, that there would be a higher ratio of claims that ultimately would be paid. And we have been recognizing that that was not occurring, but we had really still felt that over a period of 4 or 5 years that that was still going to be the case. And beginning really in 2011, we kind of reevaluated and said, look, we've seen this lower frequency trend now for 5 years, basically. It has not resulted in more claims being closed with indemnity. We need to look at this, and we need to look at it more currently. And that created a pretty large amount of favorable development in 2011, which, of course, now that we're, if you will, returning to more normal levels, we get compared again. So I think that's one of the situations or the arguments that has been made, that the prior period development is slowing. At the same time, with lower loss costs in general and lower average rates in general, your base of reserves is decreasing. So we can still have the same percentage of favorable development, still be generating the same results, but the amount of dollars that come out of that will be smaller. And I think that is what we're seeing right now. So I think there is some merit to the argument, but I think for different reasons. In other words, prior period development may well be smaller nominally, but it doesn't signify a change in the level of profitability or the level of results. In terms of the business itself, and we're diversifying, if you want to call it that, in terms of trying to provide a more robust solution to our overall healthcare clients and to be able to generate more healthcare business. We're not diversifying for the sake of diversification, nor because we see any kind of decline in the quality of the healthcare liability business or a reason to move out of the healthcare liability business. We actually see the opportunities there in terms of moving our business, if you will, upscale. As groups get larger, as hospitals become more acquirers of physicians, as hospitals start to merge together, continue to merge together and form larger chains, we need to be able to provide a wider range of products for those. We have the balance sheet to provide that coverage. We just needed the expertise to do it, and we needed the products to do it. So that, you know, answers the question, I think, about MedMark and the products liability, about Eastern in particular, and the workers' comp.
Yeah. I don't look at that as maybe hiring new expertise or bringing in expertise, although we did get that expertise, as a way to diversify out of what we were doing. We saw it as a way to bring expertise into the company, long-standing, profitable expertise, to cement the activities that we were doing in the healthcare professional liability. It makes us stronger in that area because we now have a product that spans the wide spectrum of healthcare. We get greater interest from a wider spectrum of distribution brokers that in the past might not have been interested in our product, now are. So for us, it was about cementing the reputation that we had and our capabilities rather than moving outside of something.
And if I just think about book value growth, I mean, obviously, historically, it's been a very impressive sort of story there. But if I just look at the last 6 months, I look at year-end 13, and I look at book value at the end of the second quarter, it's about 2.8% growth. You know, with the decline in rates, a lot of your, you know, casualty peers have, you know, shown a significantly more than that. And there's the argument that when rates go up, that's obviously going to be, you know, an adverse to your book value growth. What's your confidence in sort of maintaining the momentum and growing your book value in that context?
Well, I would point out that one of the things that's borne on the growth in book value has been the very disciplined amount of share buyback and capital we've returned to shareholders. If you go through last Friday, the end of August, we had spent $150 million this year buying back our own stock. With the dividend declared yesterday, that's another $53 million in declared dividends in 2014. So at that point, we are at $203 million returned to shareholders through declared dividends or share repurchase, which already eclipses by a wide margin any other shareholder return dollar amount that we've ever done. So I think part of it is that we have responded to shareholder concerns about capital management, remain very committed to that.
Okay. Going back to the Eastern comments, have you seen any of that benefit come through yet? You know, you're targeting larger healthcare facilities and whatnot. What have you seen thus far with the Eastern acquisition? Has that benefited you guys at this point, or is that still something that's going to be down the road?
It's starting to benefit. We're 8 months into the having Eastern as part of ProAssurance. We've laid a lot of groundwork at this point in time. We have several proposals out pending for Eastern clients that have been Eastern clients for workers' compensation, where we're now offering the opportunity to get professional liability coverage with ProAssurance. We have some Eastern captive clients, the alternative risk markets portion of Eastern, that are looking at bringing their professional liability insurance into the existing workers' comp program that they have with Eastern Re, the captive operation. We have appointed or cross-appointed a number of agents, Eastern agents in certain areas that now have the ability to write professional liability coverage with ProAssurance, and ProAssurance historical healthcare agents that now have the ability to write workers' comp with Eastern, and there have been some sales in that regard. So it's something that's going to, we believe, develop and continue to evolve. Hard to you know, put a particular number on it right now, but we do see some good opportunities there, and there is a whole group of people within both sides of the organization that are focused on developing these opportunities.
Has the Eastern acquisition performed as, would you say, performed as expected at this point?
Yes.
Is that, okay. And in terms of the Lloyd's investment, which is another area people are seeing you branching out beyond what your core has been, what is that Lloyd's operation? You've only had a quarter, really, of real Lloyd's numbers. So what are they writing there? What are they focusing on writing at this point? What's that going to look like over time? And what benefit are you getting out of that?
Okay. First, in terms of Lloyd's, again, we started on January 1, and it's being reported on a one-quarter lag. So as Bob said, there's only really one quarter of numbers that you can see at this point in time. The portfolio business being written is a diversified portfolio, includes property and casualty coverages. It is primarily or predominantly U.S.-based business. On the property side, there is property insurance and property reinsurance. On the casualty side, it's mostly reinsurance, mostly excess of loss with some proportional or quota share reinsurance. The mix of business includes medical professional liability. Duncandale, again, the CEO lead underwriter there, has a long history of being active in the medical professional liability reinsurance market. But it also includes general liability, other casualty business. And on the property side, two different teams were brought on with particular expertise in the property area. There is some international property business, in other words, non-U.S. property business as well. When you start a new syndicate at Lloyd's, even though you may have particular areas of expertise, Lloyd's in their whole regulatory process requires diversification from the perspective of maintaining a balance. Over a period of years, you can gravitate more into certain areas than others as you demonstrate, you know, your results. From a pro-assurance perspective, the opportunities that it will bring to us are international healthcare. We had looked and have looked at various points in time about being able to take the expertise that we have in the U.S. and apply it in other countries that are gravitating more towards or have gravitated more towards a U.S.-based tort liability system, and we're seeing that more and more in Europe. So we think that there will be opportunities there. The difficulty in doing it on as a U.S.-based company is you have to go and get approved and licensed, authorized, and some countries are fairly protective, and it can be an onerous, expensive process. Lloyd's basically does all that for you by maintaining its licensure and ability to operate on a worldwide basis. So if opportunities arise for the syndicate to write the business, we can then provide our expertise in claims handling, underwriting, risk management to some of these international opportunities that come up. Also, Medmark, our product liability and life sciences company, has many U.S. clients that are taking clinical trials and other research-type activities offshore because FDA regulations in the U.S. have become and are continuing to become more onerous. So clinical trials are being done in other countries. These companies that are Medmark clients need the ability to have insurance coverage for these coverages, for these activities, and the Lloyd's syndicate will be able to provide us with that opportunity as well, using Medmark's underwriting and claims expertise.
How easily applicable is going from the U.S. system to international in terms of healthcare liability?
It depends. If you look at some countries that are again, gravitating more towards the U.S.-based tort liability system. By that, I mean countries that have moved to a contingency fee basis for attorneys, like the U.K. has over the past 10 or 15 years, as compared to in the past. If you wanted to sue a doctor or a hospital in England, you had to go out and pay an attorney by the hour. You weren't able to do it the way it's done in the U.S. As that has expanded and developed, claim frequency has increased, the size of claims and awards has increased. So in the UK in particular, there is a very similar system, and at the same time, there is a limited number of providers there. Most of the physician malpractice coverage in the UK is provided through two of the medical societies, and both of them have had their difficulties, financial difficulties over the years, because the cost of claims has increased so dramatically. So we believe that there are some very parallel type opportunities for the UK and also in some of the other Western European countries.
All right, we've got a few more questions, a few more minutes. So if you have any more questions out there, certainly raise your hand.
Okay, be right there.
Thanks. I think if I heard you guys correctly, what you're targeting in MedMal now is about a 13 ROE, is that right?
Yes.
And I think I've got a decent idea of what the Lloyd's is. What's workers' comp ROE looking like? And I guess given the mix that you see and, you know, what you guys are doing to in terms of capital management, continue to lever the balance sheet, I think you do have some reserve redundancies there that should be coming through. As you kind of think about the progression of the business, I'm trying to understand what to expect, overall profitability of the company, where the ROE targets are, I guess, by segment, and then maybe tie it together and what to expect looking forward for profitability.
I think it's fair to say that our overall ROE target applies across the organization, and whether that is the workers' comp segment or the specialty insurance segment, or the, in the long run, the Lloyd segment. Now, of course, now Lloyd's is going to be something that develops and is probably going to be conservatively reserved at the outset, and you won't necessarily see that coming through in the short run. But on the whole, we have a general return target that we expect over the long period of time to apply to all parts of the organization. And if we feel at any point in time that an area is not able to meet that with a, you know, in a reasonable time frame, then we'd have to make, you know, corrective action, either rates or change in underwriting approach or change in claims handling approach. So, I mean, in general terms, I'd say we have one ROE target.
And maybe, so now, given where we are today, what can you tell shareholders about what that progression looks like and over the next couple of years, how to get the entire company up to that sort of target?
I think part of it certainly is the denominator there, and that is the capital base. And as Frank mentioned earlier, we're doing a good bit of return of capital to try to not right-size the capital base strictly from that perspective, but to make sure that we have a capital base that allows us to take the opportunity to make acquisitions when they come up. And we have been a very acquisitive company over the years. Most of our growth in the past 10 or 15 years has resulted from acquisitions as opposed to pure organic growth. So we want to keep enough there and then return capital to shareholders and generate profitability. We don't give specific guidance or targets, but I think just to reinforce again, we have this ROE target that we expect to meet. Our incentive comp is tied to that as well. So we say that we're confident that we can meet our targets in the long run. It may vary from year to year. It will vary from year to year, and that's not the way that we manage. We manage for that long-term target, and I think that we've been successful in meeting it over the long term as well.
Do you see yourself adding any other lines of business or any, you know, what's your still your appetite for additional M&A?
Well, I'd say, and we've had that question a couple of times this morning in individual meetings, we always have an appetite for additional M&A in the lines of business that we're in where it makes sense. I think that we've proven that over the years, not only in healthcare, but Eastern has done its own acquisition in the past, and PICA, the podiatry company, had done a number of acquisitions before it became part of ProAssurance and so forth. So additional acquisitions in the both the healthcare or workers' comp area would be, we'd certainly be open to it if it made sense, if it added to the either penetration in existing markets or give us the opportunity to move into market states, for example, that we aren't already in. In terms of filling out anything more, we don't have any real holes that we see right now in our product suite.
I would stress again that we continue to maintain this healthcare-centric focus.
Right. Okay. Well, that's about time for hit for this. So, why don't you join me in thanking Howard and Frank for showing up and asking your questions?